From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. As always, this year's fall TV season offers a flurry of new shows, from the Batman origin story Gotham to the comedy Blackish, about an African-American father trying to give his kids a better sense of their cultural identity. We'll talk about the season's highlights and the rise of non-TV options, including Amazon Prime's new breakout web hit Transparent. That's about a transgender father transitioning into becoming a woman. Forum is up next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. More than 25 new shows have debuted this fall on network, cable, and online. And in this Forum Hour, we want to review what is and isn't worth your watching as another season of television is underway, and discuss also the future of the changing world of television. And we have a panel, and let me tell you who is on that panel. Eric Deggans is joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida this morning, TV critic for National Public Radio. Good to have you. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Mary McNamara, who's a TV critic with the Los Angeles Times and joins us from Los Angeles. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, thank you for joining us. And Alan Sepinwall is also joining us this morning from Short Halls, New Jersey. He's a TV critic with HitFix.com, an entertainment news website, and he's also author of The Revolution Was Televised. Welcome, Alan Sepinwall.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let's begin with Eric Deggans, who, as I said, is TV critic for National Public Radio. And I noticed an article in the Washington Post, Eric, just to kind of get a quick fix from you on this, which is talking about this new program, Blackish, which I want to talk with you about. I think all the critics are in agreement that this is one of the most exciting programs of the new batch. But the article says that there's a lot of diversity, a lot of identity that has to do not only with black identity, but the Goldbergs has been on a while. we've got programs like Modern Family, which is gayish, I suppose. Scandal, Cristela, lots of diversity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what we've seen in terms of this TV season is an astounding amount of ethnic diversity and racial diversity. I counted up to a dozen new shows that either have non-white stars, non-white co-stars, or non-white creators making them. And Blackish is one of the ones that's getting the most attention because of its title and because of how it's the story of an upper-middle-class black family where the patriarch, Anthony Anderson, is concerned that his kids are losing touch with their black roots because of the environment they've been raised in and wealth and privilege. And the show talks about what it means to be black, what it means to be middle class, upper middle class, how younger generations are mixing their cultures in ways in which maybe older generations didn't. This character's son wants to have a bar mitzvah.
he has a bro mitzvah.
And so what's so exciting about this show is it's not just that it's centered on a black family, but it is talking very directly about race and class in ways that we haven't seen a whole lot of on network television. And it's doing it in a way that's funny. You know, it's a funny show, and it's also getting at these really interesting points, just as we're all talking about this stuff in society.
Yeah, well, I actually turned on the TV last night. I saw John Cho in this new show called Selfie. ABC has a program called Fresh Off the Boat about an Asian-American family, and both Jane the Virgin and Cristela are about Latinos. So there's a lot of, as you say, ethnic diversity, at least in this year's season. But Blackish has been getting a great deal of buzz, and it's a comedy that stars Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross, Diana Ross's daughter, and let's hear a cut.
Oh, and Dad, me and some of the field mob decided what I should do for
field
my birthday
mob?
Party. I want to have a bar mitzvah.
Oh.
Before you say anything, I know we're not Jewish, but Zach knows a rabbi who's great at pushing through conversion, so.
Hold on. So you'd be willing to forsake your own religion to have a party?
Short answer, yes.
Are you listening to this?
Dad, now that I think about it, if I do, you won't have to worry about anyone calling me Andy anymore, because when I convert, I'll get a Hebrew name. I'm going to go with either Shlomo or Shmuel.
What?
Both pretty solid, bro.
That's a cut from Black-ish new ABC show. Lawrence Fishburne actually plays the cool live-in grandfather in this, who offers sage advice and makes tracksuits look cool. And everybody on board about this? Mary McNamara, you like it too?
I liked it much more in concept than I did like the pilot. I thought the pilot was a little clunky, but I love the intention of it. I mean, I think what Eric said is absolutely right. I think, you know, we went from the past couple of seasons finally including more women, and then last year we started to see more racial diversity in shows even like Sleepy Hollow, where that, you know, it wasn't the point of the show, but you had like three black leads in Sleepy Hollow along with a white lead. And now we have these, you know, three or four shows that are directly, you know, attacking or targeting racial issues, and that's really exciting. I wasn't as enamored of the actual show. I felt like it was... the main character was a little bit of a buffoon. I wanted him because he was making really good, smart points, and yet the show kind of backed away from them, I felt, in the pilot. But I'm really interested to see how the show progresses.
Well, one show I know that you love, Mary, was Amazon Prime's new show, Transparent, and yes. Lots of people love it. It's with Jeffrey Tambor, who I think is a terrific actor, and it's 10 episodes about a family called the Pfeffermans. And it's really about a man at 70-some years old changing from being more to Mora. I mean, does a transsexual operation. Let's hear a cut from it.
Listen, I need to talk to you about something. There's a big change going on. And oh God. I love you kids. I love you kids. I love you kids. I love you kids. I love you kids.
It is cancer.
Daddy,
oh my
are you
God!
Dying? Just
you
tell
were
us
right.
If you're dying.
I knew it was cancer.
Daddy, are you dying?
I don't think
cancer.
He has cancer.
No, and if Daddy had cancer, he'd have the kind of way he looked at. The one, well, all your friends died of it. What is the thing? Prostate.
Right.
Prostate cancer. Right. That's the one that you probably have.
Cancer.
Right?
Cancer. Super sick.
Oh my God!
Never
nothing
know.
Nothing to be joking about.
Then that's beside.
How many of your friends?
Stop it!
This is really a great family drama, from everything I read, Mary McNamara.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's one of these shows that we've never seen before, the type of it, the topic that it's addressing. You know, this is Amazon entering the big leagues with a drama that I can't imagine is not going to get at least an Emmy nomination for Tambor's performance, which is just astonishing. And, you know, not only is it, you know, it tells the story of a man transitioning to a woman, the woman that he felt he has been all his life. It also then, there are three adult children who are all in various stages of crisis that I'm assuming will somehow link back to the fact that, you know, basically they grew up in a family where one of the parents was living a lie. And so it's addressing sort of the dangers of secrecy, the dangers of shame, you know, which is obviously a wonderful and eternal conversation for television to be having. And this is, you know, where you have a new streaming service not only using its technological capabilities to deliver something in a way that we've never seen before, but also the fact that they're, you know, it's you know, being on the cutting edge of topic, the cutting edge of the kind of show. This is not a show you would ever see on a broadcast network. It's even hard to imagine on a premium channel, because it is, you know, very what do I want to say, domestically inclined, as opposed to, you know, there are no mobsters involved. So it's hard to imagine it even being on the, you know, HBO. So it's really wonderful to see Amazon, you know, going out on a limb, not just in terms of technology, but also in terms of narrative.
Yeah, let me go to you, Alan Sepinwall, on this. And again, Alan Sepinwall is TV critic of HitFix.com. Amazon has suddenly become a serious player in premium programming, from most accounts gunning for Netflix. But we're seeing a lot of streaming going on with not only Amazon Prime, but with Hulu and Netflix. This has got to have a real effect on, well, the more expensive things like Showtime and HBO.
I mean, it's having an effect on everything. It's even having an effect on the kind of job that Eric and Mary and I do. It's just that there is so much interesting programming now coming from everywhere, coming from all of these channels, now coming from all of these streaming services. And what's happened is, and it's the same thing that happened, you know, way back when HBO had The Sopranos and Sex and the City and Six Feet Under, which is one outlet starts, you know, going into the Wild West, and they're not operating with any rules, and so they change the game and they force everyone else to try to struggle to catch up. And now you see that coming from these streaming services, which have this new delivery system. They can do the kind of shows that, as Mary said, you know, I can't imagine anyone else doing something like Transparent, which is extraordinary. And it's going to force, you know, even something like HBO, which has been doing this for so long, to maybe really rethink how they do things, not only in terms of the kind of programs they order, but even in certain cases and how they schedule them. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing some of the premium channels make more episodes available on demand up front, because that is starting to be what viewers want.
So how many hours does this mean you watch now, Alan?
In a given week, say. I'm afraid to even count it. You know, I was up at 7 this morning. I've watched, you know, at least 3 hours worth of things. I'm doing this interview, then I'm going to watch more, write more, and will be doing so all the way up until I go to bed around 11:30 or 12.
And Eric Deggans, let me go back to you. Eric Deggans, again, is TV critic for National Public Radio. There's a lot of talk in all this, and I just wonder how much of it we can take seriously about all the effect that this is going to have on, well, what they call cord cutters. I mean, you know, people can go to digital antenna, they can go to Slingbox, do all kinds of things. Pay TV defectors are rising in numbers, and cable, I don't know, what's the effect here? Some say cable is dying.
Well, I don't know if cable is dying. I think we're at an interesting transition point where there's a lot of alternatives to cable out there. But the bottom line is, if you want to watch sports, for example, particularly if you want to watch sports as it's happening, you would have a hard time catching the games you want to see, especially in football and baseball and the major sports, if you didn't have cable. I think is happening here is there's a multiplicity of different ways for people to access the media that they want. And for people who don't want to have that hefty cable bill and are willing to go without live news coverage and sports, you can have a Netflix subscription, and you can maybe put a digital antenna on your TV, and you can get the kind of media that you want. Now, if you want access to much more, and particularly if you want access to much more the second it becomes available, if you don't want to wait a year for a series to become available on Netflix, then you get cable and you get access to that stuff. But there was a point when everybody thought somebody's going to come up with the catch-all. Somebody's going to invent the device. Or, you know, at one point we thought cable companies would do this. They'd figure out a way to give everybody everything they wanted in one box, and everybody would buy that box. I don't think that's what's going to happen. What's going to happen is people will pick the box that they are most comfortable with and use that box to tailor their media experience to exactly what they want. And it's up to the people who are making the boxes, the Amazons, the Apples, the Comcast, to figure out how to offer enough enough media to people to draw constituencies that will support their business. And I think the days of expecting to have one box to give you everything is over. And now you got to find the box that serves your needs, or the boxes that serve your needs.
And Mary McNamara, if we can go back to some of what have been rolled out this fall on television and get your take on them, I want to talk at least briefly with you about a program called How to Get Away with Murder, which some are comparing to The Paper Chase, but also got a great deal of maybe advanced publicity by Alexandra Stanley talking about angry black women and causing a lot of people to, shall we say, get upset. But features Viola Davis from The Help, people may remember, and done by a woman who has certainly been quite successful, Shonda Rhimes. You like it?
Oh, very much, very much. I think it's important to note that it's produced by Shonda Rhimes, but it's not written by Shonda Rhimes. And I think that is pretty obvious from the beginning, because even though there are certain hallmarks, Shonda Rhimes hallmarks, including a strong, very strong female lead and a very diverse cast and a very kind of like relentless pace, it is very different from the shows that she has written. And
she's been mainly associated with Scandal and Grey's Anatomy, right?
Yeah, and Private Practice.
Right.
So, but also, you know, its premiere gave Thursday nights on ABC to Shonda Rhimes. So you have Grey's, Scandal, and How to Get Away with Murder. I think it's that order, or maybe it's another order. But anyway, all three of them are produced by Shonda Rhimes. So it's like that has never been done by before. We've had, you know, we have many prolific showrunners, but we've never had a showrunner who basically owns a night on a network, and that is pretty amazing. Yet the show is very good. It's, you know, I mean, it's a standout. It would be a standout anyway because you have, you know, a star like Viola Davis anchoring it, although increasingly we are seeing Oscar nominees and Oscar winners coming to television. So, but she's amazing in it, and it seems to have a lot of promise. So, yeah, it's a very exciting. It's probably one of like the three standout shows of the new fall season.
We have a cut. Let's hear it.
Step one: discredit the witnesses. Step two: introduce a new suspect. Step three: we bury the evidence. We throw so much information at the jury that they walk into the deliberation room with one overwhelming feeling: doubt. That's how you get away with murder. See you in the courthouse at 9.
Well, that's a cut from the show, and you can hear the law professor there holding forth. That's How to Get Away with Murder, which, as I said, do you want to comment, Mary McNamara, on that whole kerfluffle over angry black woman?
Well, you know, my biggest problem with that particular piece, and I certainly don't want to be in a position of criticizing another critic, but I felt it totally mischaracterized the work of Shonda Rhimes. I don't think any of her characters, I would not characterize them as angry. They are formidable. They are powerful. They are indomitable. They are many things, but to say that she has, that she deals in an archetype of an angry black woman, I think mischaracterizes the work. Or to say that she is an angry black writer is to mischaracterize her work. That is not the kind of writer she is at all. She's very romantic. She can be sentimental. She's very fast-paced. She can be ruthless with her characters. But angry, I mean, that's a word that you might apply to Aaron Sorkin. Some of his characters are angry, but they are not the characters that Shonda Rhimes...
Well, they're angry white men, usually.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the characters of Shonda Rhimes creates, black, white, Asian, whatever, they're not angry. That's not the motivating force of her strong character. So I think that that was the biggest harm that was done. Many people I know were very upset by just the idea of using that incendiary language, and that is problematic. It's especially problematic if it is not accurate.
And that was a piece, again, by Alexandra Stanley in the New York Times originally. And Alan Sepinwall, again, TV critic with HitFix.com and author of The Revolution Was Televised, is with us. And Alan, you like some of these comic book adaptations. We've been talking about diversity, but we got Gotham, which goes back to Bruce Wayne before he became Batman, and The Flash about, well, The Flash.
Well, you know, all the comic book movies have been making a small fortune at the box office. TV is trying to get into it. By this time, in a couple weeks, all of the broadcast networks except CBS will have at least one superhero show. CBS now has a Supergirl show in development, so by this time next year, all of them could have at least one. I don't think this is necessarily a great fall for new shows, but one of the pilots that I watched that I enjoyed unreservedly was The Flash on the CW. The Flash is the world's fastest human. That's a character that, you know, once upon a time was very hard to pull off realistically. CBS did a version of it in, I think, the late 80s or early 90s that lasted a season and seemed kind of corny, although its heart was in the right place. Here, the advances of special effects are good enough that you can make the powers work and then from there go on and actually sort of try to tell this broad and optimistic comic book story, and it functions very well for what it's trying to be.
All right, well, let's hear cuts from both of those. Gotham is on Fox. It's, again, based on the Batman story, Gotham, about a young Commissioner Gordon when he was still a lowly detective trying to clean up the streets in the early, really dark years. And Batman does not make an appearance here except as a very young child named Bruce Wayne, whose parents have just been killed. Young Catwoman and others make early appearances. It's basically a Batman origin story where Detective Gordon kind of acts as a mentor and protector to young Bruce Wayne. Here's his cut.
My name is Bruce Wayne.
You tell me what happened, Bruce. When I was about your age, a drunk driver hit our car. Killed my dad. I was right next to him. I know how you feel right now. And I promise you, however dark and scary the world might be right now, will be light. There will be light.
That again is from the new series Gotham, which debuted this fall. This is from the CW's new show, The Flash, which you heard Alan Sepinwall talking about. It looks at the origins of the comic book superhero. And in this scene, it's from the trailer, a young man named Barry Allen was struck by lightning and wakes up with mysterious powers.
You were struck by lightning, dude.
You were in a coma.
For how long?
9 months. Welcome back, Mr. Allen. We have a lot to discuss.
See, you thought the world was slowing down. You were going so fast, it only looked like everyone else was standing still.
There is so much that we don't understand.
What's happened?
You don't really believe he can run that fast, do you?
Well, comic book or not, there's a perfect example of what we define as an anachronism. I don't think they used the word dude when the lightning flashed on the Flash. But Alan Sepinwall, those are pretty top picks for you, aren't they, those two?
Again, I mean, I would say Transparent is far and away better than anything that's coming up on the broadcast networks this month. But in terms of things that I enjoyed and find myself looking forward to, these are good. One of the things that's always a concern is because these comic book companies are now such big parts of these entertainment conglomerates' portfolio, you start getting a lot of interference. We've seen that. ABC has the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a spinoff of the Avengers, and that seems to be a show that at times is really run by committee. And you're not exactly sure how that's going to function week to week. With Gotham, you talked about it, it's a Batman origin story, but Batman's a little kid in it. So you're going to get all the Batman villains, but you're not going to ever have Batman in it. And that may be a fundamentally unbalanced show in the end, although I like the performances early on from Ben McKenzie and Donal Logue as the two cops. It's a good pilot, and the second episode was very good as well. It's an interesting phenomenon to watch right now and to see at what point we reach critical mass with these shows on TV. We've already seen with things like Amazing Spider-Man 2 that audiences are not automatically going to go to every single comic book-based movie. So we may be reaching that point as well with TV. I don't know yet.
Well, let me go back to you, Mary McNamara, because I know you have to leave us regretfully at the half-hour mark, and we're just almost upon it. And I'm interested in your thoughts about another debut show called Jane the Virgin, which certainly has a promising premise. It's about a young woman who indeed is a virgin, but there's a mix-up at the doctor's office, and she's accidentally inseminated and ends up pregnant. It's comedy, but good?
Well, it is very funny. The lead is amazing. The tone is very different for television. It's very, telenovela. There are these aspects of it that are quite fantastic, in which, you know, billboards speak to her, statues. I mean, it's like it's a fantasy kind of a comedy, a modern comedy with very current topics set in a fantasy world. That said, I don't know. I may be the only person in America. I really had a hard time with the idea of here's this girl who is going to have a baby that she never wanted, and she's basically being told by everybody that she has to have it. And I think that is problematic, and that's something that the show is going to have to work kind of hard to overcome, because the actual premise is not very funny. It's a young woman who is bent on her career, who is now pregnant through absolutely no action on her part. And so that adds, to my mind, it adds a little troubling political aspect to the storyline. But, you know, if the show can remain in this kind of candy-colored, you know, clearly fantastic world that the pilot hints at, then I think that won't be a problem.
Mary McNamara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Mary McNamara, again, a TV critic with the Los Angeles Times, and you can join us. In fact, I'd like to hear from some people. What do you like on TV? What do you not like on TV? What are you looking forward to with the new fall season? Returning shows, Good Wife, Scandal, Boardwalk Empire, Outlander, The Blacklist, Masters of Sex. Lots to talk about here, and we welcome your calls. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Join us. Email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about television, getting a preview of the fall TV season, and also looking at why more viewers are cutting the cable and seeking alternatives to traditional TV. We brought that up as well, and we certainly would like to hear your thoughts about that, as well as what you like on television or what you don't like on television. Anybody can be a critic. Everybody often is. But Maybe you have questions about the fall season and what's coming up. You've heard some cuts, and maybe you've even had an opportunity to see some of these TV shows that have already been aired, and you may have some thoughts about them. And if so, we'd like to hear from you as well. So you can join us at our toll-free number. We invite you to do so. It's 866-733-6786. We do appreciate your involvement in the program, so feel free to join it. You can also do so by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talked earlier with Mary McNamara, TV critic with the Los Angeles Times, and Eric Deggans is with us, who is TV critic for NPR, and Alan Sepinwall with us, who's TV critic for HitFix.com. And when we spoke to Mary McNamara before the break, we were talking about Jane the Virgin. Let's hear a clip from that.
You're pregnant.
I'm a virgin.
A virgin? We should talk in private.
Where did you get your degree from? The University of... My daughter said that she is a freaking virgin, so do another damn test.
Pink means pregnant.
But I've never had sex!
You are Immaculata.
What? No, Mom!
Eric Deggans, what's your take on this show?
I liked it a lot. I thought it, along with Black-ish, were probably the two best new comedies of the fall. And, I like it. Folks who remember Ugly Betty will probably recognize the rhythm of this show. It has a lot in common with the rhythm of that show in that it's a multi-generational Latino family, three Latinas, though, living in the same house, a grandmother, a mother, and Jane. And it's also based on a telenovela in the same way that Ugly Betty was, so I think maybe that's why some of the rhythms are the same. And I totally understand what Mary was saying about having a woman who's pregnant have all these people in her life tell her to keep the baby, although actually what happens is the person who donated the sperm that she got pregnant by wants her to keep the baby and give it to him. Her boyfriend actually wants her to have an abortion, and her grandmother talks her into keeping the baby. So there's actually a range of people in her life who have different reactions to what she should do. But what I loved about the show in particular was seeing a Latino family where their ethnicity was not the point of the show, but their ethnicity and culture came through very strongly. The bond these three women have, they get together and they watch telenovelas together, and the telenovela plays a central role in their lives in a way that I don't want to divulge because it's one of the best twists at the end of the first episode. But, all of that stuff comes together to make for a very rich show that I think also presents Latino characters in ways that we haven't seen before.
Well, Alan Sepinwall, we're going to go to our callers in a moment, but I want to go to you first because I suppose we're going to be hearing from callers as to what they like and what they don't like. I hope, in fact, you'll let us know what you really like. Not only necessarily in the new season, but ongoing. And The Good Wife is in its sixth season. Many consider it TV's best drama. And yet the fact of the matter is that there are lots of good dramas on TV, aren't there, Alan?
There's an extraordinary number of good dramas on TV. I mean, on Sunday alone right now, you've got The Good Wife, going up against Boardwalk Empire. Last week it was going up against Masters of Sex. Homeland comes back this weekend. You know, that show's a bit diminished from what it used to be, but there's just...
They lost the main character.
they lost one of the two main characters. He kind of had to go, and in fact, I think the show probably damaged itself by keeping him around as long as it did. But there's just, we're a few months away from, TV critic top 10 time, and I keep this running list, and there's about 35 things that I would very easily put on that list. There's an abundance of quality and an abundance of choice right now for audiences, for critics, and everyone else. It's a very good, high-class problem to have.
Well, Alan, maybe you can respond to a listener, Sean, who writes on Facebook about The Blacklist, which stars James Spader, and just started this fall, and he says one of my favorite, it's season two, but he says it's one of his favorite shows from the last fall season. What do you think about The Blacklist as it's shaping up this year?
The Blacklist is a show that when James Spader is on the screen is an awful lot of fun, and when James Spader is not on screen is not at all. And so that it's a tricky thing. He's playing this character, this master criminal, this sort of concierge of crime who facilitates other people's crimes, and now he's gone to work for the U.S. government to help them catch a lot of the people he used to work with, and he has his own mysterious agenda and his interesting quirks and all of that. And Spader's having the time of his life, and it's a good character and a great performance and just a fun show to watch, but he's surrounded by all of these really bland and terrible people who have to get screen time because I think they don't want to run Spader into the ground, and the people who make that show have not managed to make any of the other characters, you know, one-tenth as interesting as what Spader's doing.
Eric Deggans, another Facebook comment from a listener who says, speaking of cable, locking you into 100 channels that you never want to watch, I miss the Big Dish days when you could a la carte whatever channels you liked as long as you had at least five.
Yeah, it is. There is a multiplicity of choices now. What's so interesting is some of us have grown up during a TV time where you had to wait through something to see something else you wanted to see. You know, you had to sit through CableNet to get to All in the Family or whatever. And now we're at a point where no one has to wait for anything. I tell people, you can buy a DVR and you can get a Netflix subscription. And within an hour or two of programming it, and then a couple of days of the DVR recording, you never have to watch a second of television that you don't want to watch. And what that does with the audience, I think, is the audience has less patience than ever for shows that are not immediately entertaining and immediately compelling. And I think it also creates this expectation that media will serve your every need and that your need is everyone's need. So people think that what they find entertaining in a show is what everyone should find entertaining in a show. I'm not always convinced that is true. But it's an interesting media environment to be in as a critic because there are so many different ways of putting together your own little media ecology is what I call it. And everyone's is a little bit different. And we're all challenged as communicators to sort of break into that media ecology and make an impact and stay inside it to maintain our audiences. And that's the trick of the media environment of the future.
Well, speaking of media ecology, Monday night there was an announcement, as I'm sure you're well aware, Eric, that Netflix is going to experiment with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Ang Lee's film from 2000, and some think that if they're going feature films, this could be a real game changer. I mean, this was the highest grossing foreign film, I think, in U.S. history, and it was refused by Regal and Cinemark Theaters. They have concern over, the film also having, access to smartphone, but this could be a game changer, couldn't it?
There are films that have opened simultaneously, indie films that have opened simultaneously in theaters and also on demand. I've seen them, for example, on my Apple TV. So this seems to be the next step in which a major independent film would be available on IMAX screens and also through Netflix. At the same time, what it's reflecting again is what I referenced just a second ago, this on-demand attitude that people have where they're not willing to wait 3 months until you have the DVD or you can stream it on iTunes or Amazon. People want to have access to the media on the platform that they want to access it the minute that media becomes available. And so
the minute, maybe the nanosecond.
I
just have to clarify something. This is a sequel, by the way. I say this is a sequel movie to Crouching Tiger.
Crouching Tiger.
I don't think I ever used the word sequel, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, every company is trying to figure out a way to sort of meet that need in a way that they can. And in television, the pressure is that you have video on demand on cable, which generally allows networks like Fox and CBS to have five episodes of a show ready for people to watch on demand. And then you have Netflix, which has these contracts where they can feature the entire season of a show, but they're usually a year behind. So once we get into, December or January with the current season, the five shows that you're allowed to watch on video on demand won't go all the way back to the beginning of the season. You won't be able to watch every episode of, say, Person of Interest or The Good Wife on video on demand, and you won't be able to see them all in a row until like a year later when they show up on Netflix or something. So, you know, the one thing that TV has to work out is allowing people to watch old episodes of a current series on demand whenever you're in that series run. If they're 15 episodes in, you should be able to watch all 15 of them. That's what they've got to work out, and that's a big
that's
point
a
of contention in the TV industry.
Formidable challenge, yeah. Let me bring some callers on here, and we begin, Hanaro, with you. Good morning.
Good morning, yes. I wanted to just say the big advantage to streaming devices, just because what your panelists were saying about being able to watch older episodes of a show. And then I wanted to also say I recently watched Third Rock from the Sun, and it was so hilarious, and I laughed so hard in the middle of the night, just laughing really loud, waking everybody up, and, you know, it's really fun comedy that, you know, a lot of TV right now has so much violence and you know, sex, and it's good to just have, like, slap comedy that makes you really...
Well, glad you had that hilarity, Hanaro. Thank you for telling us about it. Appreciate your call. I want to actually bring on another caller, and that's Rob, who's joining us from Sacramento. Hi, Rob.
Hi. You had a question about the way that the seasons are all lined up. Most of the networks have the 13 show runs all in a row, and then you have something like USA Networks who will put out, I don't know, like five episodes, have a little break, and then come back later. It always confuses me.
Can you help the confusion here, Alan Sepinwall?
It's just sort of different business models. A cable channel like USA will generally do fewer episodes per season than a network, and what they try to do then is to stretch that out as much as possible, so you'll get half the season in the summer, then it'll take a break, come back in the winter, and sort of cycle things on and off so that the shows are on TV for more time, but with that break in between. And you know, I've been hearing complaints about that for a long time. If it was something that didn't work for them, if it cost them ratings in terms of when the shows came back, I imagine they would stop doing it. But this is the way USA has conducted business for, you know, going on about 10 years now.
And let me thank Rob for that call. And let me go to another call, and that's you, Neil. Hi.
Yeah, I just want to find out what anybody thinks of Madam Secretary. It looks promising.
It's with Tia Leone playing a Secretary of State. Alan, want to weigh in here?
I really want to like the show. I like Taya Leone. I like, you know, all the people in the cast, B.B. Newworth, Tim Daly, the creator Barbara Hall did Judging Amy. She did Joan of Arcadia. She's done a number of really fine dramas. And it's a show that's really aspiring to be a Good Wife companion piece. I've seen three episodes. It's not really there yet, though. It's very much sort of trying to figure out how to use all these people, what to do, how to juggle real-world stories in the show with a fictional presidency. So people are constantly making references to Benghazi, to Snowden, to all these things that happened in the Obama administration, even though Keith Carradine is the president there. So that's one where I think I'm, you know, if it survives, I will come back to it at midseason and see if it has figured itself out, but I don't think it has quite yet.
Well, we've got a cut from it, and then we'll hear what Eric Diggins has to say. This is, again, starring Tia Leone. It's a new CBS show. It's called Madam Secretary, and she plays a former CIA analyst, and she suddenly has to become Secretary of State. In this scene, she's discussing a speech with her staff.
We need to review your statement about the King of Swaziland visit. Okay.
Yeah, I have a rough first draft. I'm still working on the adjectives. Right now, you're happy and excited.
You need to work on the adjectives.
Well, I have to get something to the press by tomorrow.
Can I be resigned and conflicted?
You can never be either of those things.
You can be eager and optimistic.
No, she can't be eager. That's too Jimmy Carter.
Can I be cautiously optimistic?
Well, that's for more serious world events.
You can be forward-thinking.
You know what? I'll do the writing. Thanks.
Can we maybe just throw in something of substance here, maybe a reference to global health issues or developing economies?
Yeah, I just don't think now is a good time for substance.
Okay. What if I'm grateful for the opportunity to expose the world to a variety of cultural differences as we move toward a more global thinking society?
That's really good.
Should I write it down for you?
No, I'm the writer.
Just as long as our roles are clear.
Eric Deggins, one comment on Madam Secretary.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting about the very early ratings returns that we've seen on TV shows so far is that the kind of ambitious dramas that critics like me and Alan like are not necessarily the biggest ratings hits on TV networks. So we've seen shows like NCIS New Orleans and that we consider at Scorpion on CBS that we consider more pedestrian kind of shows do very well in the ratings in their debuts. And so my hunch is that even though Madam Secretary is not as good as The Good Wife and is not quite the kind of drama that I would make appointment viewing, I think it's going to do well as a companion to The Good Wife. And its ratings have been strong the two times it's aired. So that's my one sort of caveat, is that I think the show will be more successful than maybe its quality deserves at this point.
Well, I've got a listener comment from Robert who says, where's the critical judgment here? It sounds to me like these critics are saying wonderful things about every show. Can someone please sound off? So, gentlemen, have a go at it. Critics are supposed to be negative, often are, caustic and all that. Alan Sepinwall, what do you not like the new season, or for that matter, what's coming back?
I mean, we're supposed to be negative when things aren't good. You've mainly been asking us about good shows, and we've had good things to say about them. There's a show debuting tonight on CBS called Stalker that's among the more reprehensible things I've ever seen on television. It's created by Kevin Williamson, the guy who does The Following on Fox, who does Vampire Diaries for the CW, who wrote the Scream movies, who's done a lot of things in horror. Maggie Q and Dylan McDermott play cops in the LAPD in this elite anti-stalking unit, and the show is mainly an excuse to watch women scream in terror, be lit on fire, be, otherwise traumatized by the various people stalking in their lives. And the show sort of like is basically drooling over every single frame of this and relishing their misery and their pain and their anguish. And that's a really awful show. So there, I was negative.
Okay, and we'll hear maybe some negativity from Eric Deggans, but I want to also throw out a question to listeners in the time remaining. We're talking obviously about television. I'd be interested in hearing what new mainstream or under-the-radar series you like, what recent shows are you binge-watching, if any, and also we'd like to know how you are watching. Are you one of those people who are cutting the cable cord? Our toll-free number again is 866-733-6786, or you can email us forum@kqed.org. Eric, have a go.
Well, the one thing I would say to the person who made that comment is that, I feel safe in saying this about Alan, too. You know, we're TV critics because we're fans of television. So we like to talk about television that we enjoy. There's a lot of bad television out there, and I tell people I get paid to watch that stuff. I will watch the good stuff for free. So most of the new fall shows are either mediocre or awful, like Stalker. But I'm not sure I see the point in spending a lot of time talking about them unless I'm afraid that people are going to end up watching them by mistake and wasting an hour of their lives. So I'd rather talk about good stuff. I'd rather say, for example, I had a story today on NPR about The Bridge, FX's show, about cops, a detective in El Paso, Texas, and a detective in Juarez, Mexico, who are working together to try and deal with a drug cartel. Now, that's a show that was much better in its first season, I think, than maybe now this season, but it's still very good, and I love its Spanish language scenes, and its season finale, second season finale, is tonight. So I would tell people to try and free up some time to watch that show, because I like it a lot, and I hope it gets to a third season. And I'll save the negativity for when we try to warn somebody from an awful show.
Well, let me go with you, Eric Deggans, to another question. This is from a listener named George, who says, I don't watch commercial TV channels. It's curious that talk shows like this one and Terry Gross ignore the many fine PBS offerings and focus on the for-profit sector. So you want to recommend some PBS shows for us, Eric?
Of course, Ken Burns had a great run with The Roosevelts, a really great documentary that he did about the Roosevelts, and you find out how little you knew about them, and that is still available online, and I believe you can probably catch it on demand, and that's on PBS. So I think that's a great show that's really worth seeing. Of course, I'm jonesing for Downton Abbey, which we won't see in America until January.
Alan Sepinwall, anything on PBS?
Well, Eric hit the main ones. I'm not a huge Downton guy, but the Roosevelts was pretty terrific. You know, we're talking about commercial TV right now because that's where the bulk of the stuff is debuting right now on your broadcast networks, on cable, even on things like Amazon and on Netflix. PBS has to pick its spots a lot more just in terms of, you know, the budgets that its various member stations have.
I said that listeners could be critics because they often are, and this is a couple of examples here. Charles writes, if Blackish is one of the two best comedies on TV this season, I fear. I came to it without any expectations or knowledge and found that the pilot set up great conflicts and questions about African-American culture. But then they drop the conflicts for quick pseudo-resolutions, and it's not Modern Family quality of resolution. I agree with the LA Times critic. It's disappointing. Another listener, Adrian, says, I find Masters of Sex to be poorly written, choppy and uninspired. What do the critics think of The Nick? I find it deliciously dark. Alan?
The Nick is a wonderful show. It's on Cinemax. It's their first really push towards doing a more prestige show like HBO's done. Steven Soderbergh has directed, filmed, and edited all 10 episodes of it. Clive Owen's a surgeon in a New York hospital in 1900. It's one of those shows where it's the story it's telling and the ways in which it's telling that story are not really all that revolutionary, but the way in which Soderbergh shoots it is incredible. It's one of the most beautiful-looking things on TV. It has this really wildly anachronistic electronica score by Cliff Martinez that makes the whole show pulse with energy throughout it, even though it's set, 114 years in our past. I've really liked it, and the episode that aired last week featuring a race riot that overtakes the hospital was by far my favorite of those.
And a couple more listener emails. Don writes, I have non-premium channel Comcast cable. I also have access to free Amazon Prime streaming. There are more than enough network free shows than I need watch. Example, Madam Secretary, Good Wife. I also find streaming access to be too clumsy to deal with compared to TiVo. And Daniel says, I'd like to make a plug for an Australian show called Please Like Me. It's available in the U.S. on Pivot. It's primarily about a young gay man, but the depth of issues it tackles, including depression, is fascinating. The protagonist is a bit tough to like, along the lines of Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he's just interesting enough that you root for him. The show is well worth seeking out. And Tony writes, Alpha House is hysterical from Amazon. John Goodman and three other senators living together in Washington, D.C. No one I know has ever seen it. And whatever happened to Huff with Hank Azaria, Blythe Danner, and an over-the-top Oliver Platt? It was just great, and there are two seasons available to purchase on Amazon. Let's go to your calls, and Lyndon, we begin with you. Good morning.
Hi. We've been really enjoying Friday Night Lights lately. We started streaming it on Netflix, and we're not football fans. And my husband, who's never been a sports fan, says this is arguably the best show he's ever seen. And I like it because it's not violent other than what's on the football field. And it's like real people giving you role models of how they struggle to relate to each other in functional ways. And they say they were wrong and they say they're sorry and so forth. And I just think it's a real gem of a show. And I've had to put it on hold and go back to Parenthood because I just don't want it to end.
Okay. Good endorsement. Thank you for that, Lyndon. I thought we'd hear one more cut of as far as a new season. And this is from a show. It's a new Showtime drama. It's called The Affair. It's about a school teacher and a waitress. They're both married. They start an affair. And in this clip, which is from the trailer, they're talking about what marriage means to them.
Marriage means different things to different people. I used to think it meant there was this one person that I had to put above anyone else.
No.
No, I just hope I don't kill him. Do what you want to do, say what you say,
but be kind. It's going to take from our critics, Alan Sepinwall.
The Affair is a really good show. I've only seen the first episode so far, so for all I know, it could go off a cliff. The pilot's really interesting. I didn't really feel that we needed another TV show about extramarital affairs, but the writer Sarah Treem, she wrote for a terrific HBO show called In Treatment. It's got Dominic West and Ruth Wilson as the two halves of The Affair. They're both really good, and the show sort of does this Rashomon multiple point of view approach where the first half of the episode you're seeing his take on what happened, and then the second half you see her take, and it's not not really the same, and it's just a really interesting look at the ways in which adults view sex and intimacy and everything else, and the performances by the two of them, by Maura Tierney and Joshua Jackson as the respective spouses who are being cheated on, are all very strong, and I'm really waiting for Showtime to get me more episodes.
And Eric Deggans.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Alan said about the show. I think it's the first episode was compelling, but it's hard to tell. That's the one task that we as TV critics have every fall is we generally get to see one episode of a lot of these shows, and we have to figure out if it's going to be any good going forward. It's like trying to read the first chapter of a book and trying to figure out whether or not it's worth reading all the way to the end. So
can you say what made it most compelling to you, Eric?
What's that?
I just wondered if you could say what made it most compelling to you.
Well, a lot of things that Alan said. I'm a big fan of the cast, number one. And I also like the idea of seeing, you know, I was married for 22 years, and so I'm very familiar with this idea that, you know, one person in a relationship can see events one way, and another person in that relationship can see the same events in a totally different way. And so I think that that's a wonderful thing to kind of build a TV show around. The question is that something you can sustain for the length of a series? And right now I'm along for the ride, and I just hope they manage to sustain the quality that we saw in the pilot.
Somebody sent me, this is a chigga-boom type of thing the other day and said, Bob and Elaine both had happy lives for 23 years, then they got married. anyway.
No comment.
Yeah, no comment. No comment worthy. More critical responses from listeners. Yvonne says, I've been watching Gotham online, even though it's not officially in the U.S. yet, and it's fantastic. Great acting and storyline. Love the backstory for all the upcoming villains. And, boy, there's so much to talk about here. Well, we got 1 minute left, so I better wrap it up. If you had one recommendation to make, Eric, for the new season, what would it be?
Wow, one recommendation? Well, one that's coming up is The Walking Dead comes back to new episodes. I've seen the first new episode. It is incredibly bloody and gory, as you would expect. But if you're a fan of the show, you are going to love it.
Alan, one from you?
If you got an Amazon Prime account, stop whatever you're doing. Watch Transparent. I watched another new episode this morning and then got angry that I had to go and do anything else.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both. Eric Deggans, again, is TV critic for NPR. Alan Sepinwell for HitFix.com. His book is The Revolution Was Televised. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and we get online support from David Marks. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer today is Howie Gelman. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.